So happy to be with you again this evening. If there's one thing I can already say as a congregation is that y'all share sickness and everything else. So if you don't mind not sharing me with that so I can get home. I can't say enough about how excited we are to be coming down this way. I was telling some Monday night, now that everybody at Russellville knows, and they are now, they had somebody come in this morning, now that they are beginning to look forward, it's a little bit easier, it's not as sad at home. So that's good, so now we can really start looking forward, so the next thing on the agenda is the house and get all that taken care of. But so far, everything's headed in the right direction, and I've been very excited that I'm able to come down a few times here and there in between, and then we'll be here, obviously, the first part of the year. Very excited about that. I want to talk to you tonight about dealing with things that we struggle with. The reason I chose to do this lesson, it's not a new one, it's not a fresh one I've worked up, but it was after some things that we talked about Monday night. Some things that specifically Kevin Clark said. The question was asked to Kevin, do you think that maybe as Christians we're getting a little too settled in to this world? When we're supposed to be pilgrims and strangers, are we maybe getting a bit settled in? And the obvious answer to that is yes, we are putting down pegs of our tents awfully deep, says the man who's trying to buy a house, and so what I want to do this evening is talk to you about some things that I think we all struggle with in some shape, form, or fashion. And so I want to begin in Hebrews chapter 12 at verse 1. Remember, this is coming off the great hall of faith, if you will, all of these men and women of great faith. And he says in Hebrews 12 at verse 1, therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. I figure most of you have probably figured this out by now, that I typically read from the ESV. Is my preferred preference. I refer to all of them, but I actually prefer the older translations in verse 1. The ESV might have sounded a little, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which clings so closely. I really kind of prefer the older versions. And it says, therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which easily ensnares us. I like that language because I love the language of the trap. Is kind of the idea. Because let's be honest, we know that's what Satan's doing. He's laying traps for us and he hopes that we'll just blindly walk into them. And so as I think about this passage, the sin which so easily ensnares us, the sins which cling so closely, the things that you struggle with, I might not struggle with the same things that you struggle with. I'll go ahead and tell you this right up front. I have to really work on my temper. I have to be in control of that. My mother had one. My father had one. I have one. And I don't want to pass it on to my children. We'll sit at a red light and I'll hear Charlie, the youngest, come on! And I have to watch that. And so we all have those things that easily ensnare us, that can trap us if we're not careful. That's what he's talking about here. I want to shift what he's saying just a little bit. I want to shift what he's saying. Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witness, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us. All right? I'm going to ask you a question. I think this is a very logical question. If you're reading Hebrews chapter 12 at verse 1 and 2, I think this brings up a very logical question. And all of you had this question. As you read this, you all had this question. How do you catch a monkey? Did you not all have, y'all, not all of you had that question? That's a logical question. When looking at Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 1, let me make my point here and you'll understand what I'm saying. One of the easiest ways to trap monkeys in villages in Africa, one of the ways they do this, is they will affix a cage or a jar to the ground. And the mouth of the cage or the jar is big enough for a monkey to get his hand through. But when he grabs whatever is inside, typically a banana, he cannot get his fist out. And the monkey wanting that banana so badly, will not let go in order to pull his hand out. And the trap is laid. The hunter has his monkey. Nothing wrong with a banana. Nothing wrong at all with what monkeys like. Did y'all know that we open bananas wrong? We always open bananas from the stem. That's the wrong way to open a banana. You do it the way a monkey does it. You turn that thing upside down and pinch the tip, and it just falls right open. It's amazing. Learned that from a monkey. So there's things to learn from monkeys. But I want to think for just a few minutes this evening about things. I realize what he said here. He talks about sin. Sin is sin. We can't do sin. But there are some things in our life that are not sin. They are neutral. But if we cling to them so tightly, they become sin. They become something that holds us back from serving God like we should. They have us with our hand in the jar, and Satan's going to come behind us and bag us, and we'll be lost. That's what I want to talk about this evening. I realize, obviously, that's not the logical question that everyone had, but that's what I want to kind of think about. What are some things that in life are very neutral, but if we cling to them so tightly, they can become sin? I think the first one is very obvious, is it not? 1 Timothy chapter 6, if you'll turn over there. First Timothy chapter 6 at verse 10. You'll know exactly why I bring this one up first. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. It is through this craving that some have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many pangs. Money is not good or bad. Money, for us, is a piece of paper or a piece of plastic, right? It doesn't do anything. Money can't help someone or hurt someone of itself. If you put a $10 bill on the ground here, that $10 bill is not going to hurt somebody or help somebody by itself. We have to have money. We all have jobs. We have maybe saved up for retirement. We are doing things so that we can have money to buy food, to prepare, or to take care of our family. In this same letter, he's going to talk about those who don't provide for their own families or are worse than an infidel. We have to have money. You cannot live in our society without it. But if we cling to it so tightly, if we cling to it so much, we're so worried about it, if we are like the rich young or the rich fool who stored up for himself so much in the barn and that's all he was concerned about, you can just see him holding on to his wealth so tightly. And what happens? We see his lack of focus on other things. It distracts him from what he should have been doing. It keeps him from focusing on what he should have been focused on. So it is the love of money. It's not money. Money's neutral. Money can do whatever you... Money is a tool, much like a hammer. You can do good things with a hammer. You can do bad things with a hammer. But money is something that we have to have, but if we are too focused on it, if we hold to it too tightly, Satan will take advantage of that and use it against us. Let's look at a second example here. Turn to Matthew chapter 15. Matthew chapter 15, we're going to look at verse 8. Matthew 15 at verse 8. This people honors me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. In vain do they worship me, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men. You see, the Pharisees were all about their traditions. They loved their traditions. You know, in churches of Christ, we have our traditions as well. No, you say. Never. My dad said that the Church of Christ has two rules, and he's using that phrase, you know, obviously we're not denominational. But dad always said, we've always done it that way or we've never done it that way. That's how we operate. Those are our traditions. And that can be very true. Let's think about how we do stuff. The fact that we meet twice on Sunday and the potential of that changing upsets people sometimes. We meet once on Sunday in Russellville. We have an extended morning service. All we did was basically take our 5 o'clock worship and put it at 9 o'clock. That's how we did it. And we had some that kind of bristled up against that because, well, we've always met twice on Sunday. At the end of a sermon, we offer what is typically called an invitation. It's not necessarily, something that we have to do scripturally. We do it because it's a good opportunity to invite somebody to obey the gospel. We meet at 9 o'clock this morning. Wednesday night, 7 o'clock. 7 o'clock. Is that script? We might joke, oh, that's the scriptural time on Wednesday night. You got to meet at 7. But we understand that those are just traditions. And yet, we can hold on to traditions so tightly, we can make them, as he says here, almost doctrine. We make it sound like, no, this is what you have to do if you want to be right with God. You have to do this. You have to have this on the sign. You have to have this on the website. Have to have a little C in Church of Christ. Got to do all these things that are tradition. But then what do we wind up doing? We wind up holding so tightly to tradition that we lose track of this great book here. And we almost have an unwritten creed if you go too far with that. Because we've held so tightly to something that is very neutral. Traditions can be good. We meet at 9 o'clock because it's convenient. We meet at 7 o'clock because it's convenient. Down in Tampa, when we were at Florida College, a good number of the churches, they all met at 7:30. Because the traffic was so bad, you couldn't get anywhere at 7. Much less get home from work, eat, get the kids, get back to church. So you had to meet at 7:30. The tradition became that way because it was beneficial. This morning, 4 men stood up here. And one went over there, one went right here, one went right here, and one went right here. Do we have to do it? I don't guess so. I don't know of any passage. Second Opinions 2 at verse 4 says we have to do it that way, But we can, if we're not careful, hold so tightly to tradition that we lose focus on the Word of God. And then Satan has us. Jesus would rebuke the Pharisees that you would lay all of these rules and laws on people. Rules that you won't even lift your little finger to do. And maybe we wind up running people off. Maybe we wind up hurting people because our focus is on what we've always done. The Church of Christ way. As opposed to the Word of God. Look over at 1 Corinthians 15. Maybe you don't even need to turn there. 1 Corinthians 15 at verse 53 or 33. Do not be deceived, evil companions corrupt good morals. We all like friends, don't we? We all have our friends. We love our friends. There's some friends that we're closer to. Growing up in Churches of Christ, I'm very fortunate. I guess all of my best friends have always been members of the church. And that's very helpful. That's very handy that I didn't have serious negative influence in my life from that. But friends can be great. But if we hold on to a friend so tightly that comes between us and the Lord, that comes between us and the responsibilities that we have as individual Christians, then we have a problem. I think of someone like Rehoboam over in 1 Kings chapter 12. You remember Rehoboam, the people come to him and said, Rehoboam, your dad had heavy taxes on us. And he used us pretty rough as he was building the temple, as he was building his palace. We're going to need you to back it off a little bit. He says, give me 3 days to think about it. And he goes to the wise older guys. And he says, what should I do? And they say, you need to listen to him, fella. And then he goes to his buddies, and his buddies say, you stand up and you show them who's boss. That was not the advice he needed. Those were not the friends he needed. And he clung so tightly to those friends that he wound up dividing the kingdom. Wind up causing these great problems because he put so much emphasis on those worldly friends. And we have to be very careful. I'm not saying we can't have friends that are not Christians. That's not my point at all. My point is we need to be careful with them, a concern about the influence that they may have over us, the depth of that relationship. That is why I am very excited to be a part of this congregation, because it seems like this congregation has such a good, thick family atmosphere. Because that's what we need, people. I realize that we can't go out of the world, that we can't completely remove ourselves from the things that this life throws at us. But it sure is beneficial 2 or 3 times a week to be able to get away from all that, to get together with your family, where you can help one another focus on truly spiritual things. And there might be a time that some of those friends that are in the world that we have to let go of, so that Satan doesn't come up behind us and bag us like a poacher and take us with him. Look at Philippians chapter 3. Philippians chapter 3, let's start reading at verse 4. Though I myself have reason for confidence in the flesh also, if anyone else thinks he has reason for confidence in the flesh, I have more. Circumcised on the eighth day, of the people of Israel, of the tribe of Benjamin, a Hebrew of Hebrews, as to the law, a Pharisee, as to zeal, a persecutor of the church, as to righteousness under the law, blameless. But whatever gain I had, I counted as loss for the sake of Christ. Indeed, I count everything as loss because of the surpassing worth of knowing Christ Jesus my Lord. For his sake I have suffered the loss of all things and count them as rubbish in order that I may gain Christ. We have to be careful with our desire for career and education. I'm a firm believer in education. I'm still in school. If I could find someone to pay me to go to school, boy, I would do it in a heartbeat. I know people make fun. I love it. I love learning new stuff. It's great. But what happens is, or what can happen if we're not careful, we can come to be defined by our job. You're an electrician. You're a miner. You're a veterinarian. And all of a sudden, that's all we are, as opposed to being a Christian. Now, we might enjoy our jobs, and that's great. I hope you have a job that you can enjoy. But at the end of the day, that's not what should define us. That's not what should be the most important. That's how we get that money we mentioned earlier, so that we can take care of our family and do the things that we need to do. But hopefully that doesn't define us. And what can happen is you can cling so dearly to that, so tightly to that, that your job, your career, your education, or whatever it may be, comes between you and the Lord. Here is Paul. He's on the fast track to a seat on the Sanhedrin Council, it seems. Some argue that he already had it. It depends on how you view various other passages. He's on the fast track to the Sanhedrin Council. He is an up-and-coming, hot-shot Jew. He says, well, I got to give that up. I can't hold on to that and serve God as I am to serve God. He's got the banana boy, and it was great, and he says, I have to let it go. I have to let it go so that I can serve God. And I want you to notice what he says in verse 8. We almost miss this. We're so used to this passage, we almost miss it. He says in verse 8, indeed, I count everything as lost because of the surpassing worth of knowing Christ Jesus my Lord. Not the surpassing worth of heaven. Not the surpassing worth of staying out of hell for all eternity. It was enough for Paul to know Jesus Christ. Do we know Him? Do we know Him that well? Can we have that relationship that we appreciate what Jesus does so much, we know that we need to serve Him to such a depth that we can say, boy, if I have to give all of this up to serve Christ, I'm happy to do it. Because Paul was. Let's look at over in the Old Testament. Look at Ecclesiastes chapter 1. This initial poem that kind of opens this book here. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What a great way to start a book, isn't it? That's a great way to get everybody roused up for being there. Look at how worthless all this stuff is, folks. All right, let's be excited to study here. Verse 3, what does man gain by all the toil at which he toils under the sun? A generation goes, a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun goes down and hastens to the place where it rises. The wind blows to the south and goes around to the north, and round goes the wind, and on its circuit the wind returns. All streams run to the sea, but the sea is not full. To the place where the streams flow, there they flow again. All things are full of weariness. A man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. What has been is what will be, and what has been done is what will be done, and there is nothing new under the sun. Is there a thing of which it is said, see, this is new? It has already been before the ages before us. There is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of later things yet to be among those who come after. In our day and age, we want to make a name for ourselves. That's what living life in this world is all about. Making an impact, making a name for yourself, contributing something to society, and maybe one of these days your name might be a footnote in history. That's kind of how we view life. Trying to make an impact in life. And I love, if Solomon wrote this, I love what Solomon says. They're not going to remember you. Just get over it. Yeah, we got to wake up and just realize there's nothing new. There is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance. I know my dad's father was a preacher. Died when I was 8 years old. Barely remember him. His dad was a preacher and was named Charles G. Caldwell. Ours is Charles G. Caldwell. He is technically the fifth generation Charles G. Caldwell. That's my great-grandfather. I don't know the name of his father. 100 years, 115 years, and that's it. That's all I got. Now, my dad probably could have told you more before he passed. My Uncle Collie could probably tell you. 115 years, 120 years. That's it. That's all we got. And all of a sudden, the Caldwell name might as well be gone. We don't need to hold so tightly to that, to trying to leave some lasting legacy, that we open ourselves up to other things that might harm us. I'll tell you, the best legacy you can leave is your children. And this is something that I try and focus on with my three little ones. I have a 3, a 6, and a 9-year-old. And it scares me to death that I'm halfway done with that one right there. That terrifies me. That in another 9 years or so, all right, have fun, go. And have I done what need? That's the legacy I should be concerned about. Not a name for myself, not how great I am. If we hold too tightly to that, Satan's going to jump all over us, take advantage of that all day long. Turn over to James chapter 1. James 1 at verse 13. James 1 at verse 13. The term that we're going to look at here is actually a neutral term. The term is really desire. But what often happens is in context where it's sinful desire, the term is often translated as lust, which we understand that connotation. But sometimes the word, it doesn't have to be a desire for bad things. So we might have desires, but when a desire for anything, we hold to it so tightly and it becomes something that it shouldn't be, then we have a problem. James 1 at verse 13. Let no one say when he is tempted, I am tempted by God. For God cannot be tempted with evil, and he himself tempts no one. But each person is tempted when he is lured and enticed by his own desire. I want you to notice something here. I'm not trying to be crude, but I want you to notice the sexual language of this passage here, okay? But each person is tempted when he is lured and enticed by his own desire. Then when desire has conceived, gives birth to sin, and sin, when it is fully grown, brings forth death. You see, we might have desires for things that aren't necessarily a problem, but when we cling so closely to them, they become that death. They conceive of sin. And when sin becomes full grown, it brings forth death. And I've already mentioned this about myself. Let's look over to Ephesians chapter 4. Ephesians chapter 4 at verse 26. Be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your wrath. temper is actually a neutral thing. In our society, it's you have a temper, and so that's kind of a bad thing. Temper, if I'm not mistaken, actually refers to the edge of a knife, if I'm not mistaken, about how sharp the edge of the knife is. All of us have a temper. The question might better be, how short is our fuse? How long does it take so that we see that temper? How in control of it are we? And so we have, all of us, a temper. But we have to be in control of it. If we cling so tightly to maybe releasing that temper, doesn't that feel good? Oh, man, someone cuts you off in traffic. Oh, you just want to yell, oh, listen here, you just want to lay down on the horn and just let them have it. Shake your fist at them. Be angry and do not sin. My wife had to help me with this one. I guess I just felt that if I was angry, it was justified and other people needed to know why. And she said, you just look like a jerk. That's what a good wife does for you. Just helps you out a little bit. Because I thought I was justified in my anger, and that was, you know, then I was fine with the way I acted or whatever I said. But then what I wind up doing is not showing Jesus Christ. What I wind up doing is putting my hand in this jar and letting Satan come and get me. Do you remember when Cain killed Abel? He said, you need to watch yourself. Sin crouches at the door, and if you don't watch it, he'll get you. I love the picture there, especially when you compare that to what Peter says about Satan as a lion crouching, ready to pounce. We have to watch these things that can be very neutral. If we cling to them so tightly, then Satan has us, because we've made that our focus. Let's look at 1 Kings chapter 11, and we'll wrap this up. Now, I realize I've been talking about neutral things that are not necessarily sin. But we do the same thing that Solomon does in 1 Kings 11. He just does it with sin. Because really, these things can become sin. And it's Solomon's heart that gets him into trouble. And we can do the same exact thing. 1 Kings chapter 11 at verse 1. Now, King Solomon loved many foreign women, along with the daughter of Pharaoh, Moabite, Ammonite, Edomite, Sidonian, Hittite women, from the nations concerning which the Lord had said to the people of Israel, you shall not enter into marriage with them, neither shall they with you, for surely they will turn away your hearts after their gods. Solomon clung to these in love. He had 700 wives who were princesses and 300 concubines, and his wives turned away his heart. For when Solomon was old, his wives turned away his heart after other gods, and his heart was not wholly true to the Lord his God, as was the heart of his father David. For Solomon went after the Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Sidonians, and after Milcom, the abomination of the Ammonites. So Solomon did what was evil in the sight of the Lord, and did not wholly follow the Lord, as David his father had done. Then Solomon built a high place for Chemosh, the abomination of Moab, and for Molech, the abomination of the Ammonites, on the mountain east of Jerusalem. And so he did for all his foreign wives who made offerings and sacrificed to their gods. You see a couple of things there? Solomon clung to the women, and his heart was not fully devoted to the Lord. That's what causes this problem. When we cling to these other things and not to God, that is the problem. Thus lies the issue that I struggle with on a daily basis. What is going to be of the utmost importance today? Me, my feelings, my desires, or my God? One more passage, Deuteronomy chapter 6. Because Moses dealt with this a long time ago. This has always been an issue, and Moses gave us the solution to this issue many, many years ago. Now, this is the commandment, the statutes and the rules. This is Deuteronomy 6 at verse 1. That the Lord your God commanded me to teach you, that you may do them in the land to which you are going over to possess it. that you may fear the Lord your God, you and your son and your son's son, by keeping all his statutes and his commandments, which I tell you all the days of your life, and all that all your days may be long. Hear therefore, O Israel, and be careful to do them, that it may go well with you, that you may multiply greatly, as the Lord, the God of your fathers, has promised you, in a land flowing with milk and honey. That sounds great. How do we do that? Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. And here's the solution. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your might. If God has all of that, there's no room for anything else. There's no room for anything else to hold on to so tightly. The money that we have, it's just a tool. We view it as God would view it. These friends, well, we have a good time together, but they're not going to take me away from my service to God. All of these other things, they are mere tools to help get us to the end of the road so that we can go be with God in heaven. That's what the Ecclesiastes author concludes. All of this life, all of these things that we put so much emphasis on, it's worthless unless we get to heaven. That's the point of it all. One more passage, but we don't have to turn there. We have these things in our lives that we love. We cling to them so dearly. And yet Jesus was very clear. If anyone wishes to come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me. We can't be concerned about self. And it's self that's holding so tightly, like that silly little monkey holding to that banana in the jar, trapped, and Satan's ready to bag us. And if we hold on to these things, then he'll get us. If, however, we're following Christ, we'll be okay. If we're following Christ, we're going to do what Christ wants us to do. We won't be holding so tightly. We'll have the correct view. We'll have the right perspective on life and the things in this life and the blessings that God gives us. Let me be very clear. I've said some things. A lot of these things we're talking about are blessings from God. But we need to see them as that. They are something that God has given us, and we're to use them as He would have us to use them. But we can only do that if we're serving God as He would have us to serve Him. Are you doing that this evening? I realize that most of us here this evening are Christians. And so this is something that we struggle with. I think that all of us, even these neutral things, they're not bad one way or the other. But if we hold on to them so tightly, put too much emphasis on them, then they can distract us from serving God as we need to. And so maybe that's something to think about this week as we go forward and try and be better Christians this week. If you're not a Christian, you need to become one. We invite you to do that now, but you need to know what God asks of you. He wants all of you. Your heart, your soul, your mind, and your strength. There's nothing over here you can cling on to. You can't have this and Jesus Christ. So if you're willing to give it up and walk with Him, let us know while we stand and while we sing.